Hello everybody, how you doing? Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams. And today on the show, so I'm just pouring myself a little coffee here. Today on the show, we've got Jose Emilio Gobbo Jr. He's a jazz guitarist up and coming. I believe he's getting his doctorate right now, or he just got it. So I'm having him on the show. I got a chance to sit down with him at the University of Illinois, Cranford Center for the Performing Arts, the Elnora Guitar Festival. This is the last interview in that series. So thank you to everybody who helped out with that. That was really it was an exciting thing, and I got most of the interviews that came out this year so far have come from that. So I'm excited about that. I hope you guys can deal with me swallowing coffee once in a while on the show. The show is sponsored by Simon Powis and ClassicalGuitarToolkit.com. You can go to ClassicalGuitarToolkit.com for free practice resources, including printable scale books and other resources from the Classical Guitar Corner universe. That's ClassicalGuitarToolkit.com for free online educational resources from Simon Powis, who's always up to something, and also SavageClassical.com. You can go to Savage, S-A-V-A-G-E, Classical.com for the best guitars on the Eastern Seaboard. Make sure you tell Richard that Brett sent you. He's by appointment only out there these days. That's Bayshore, New York, or you can have the guitar sent to you. And, of course, our new sponsor is RosettaPodcast.com/insider. That's RosettaPodcast.com/insider. You can get subscriptions for as low as $6.50 a month. Now, when I got Rosetta Stone back in the day, it was like $200 or $300 for one lesson out of the three. Am I right about that? I mean, so it was like $1,000 if you wanted to study. Now, for $6.50, you can use it across all your devices. That's RosettaPodcast.com/insider. And, you know, I don't study to go communicate with people. I don't plan on communicating with Germans for a very long time. But I know a little bit about it, and it's just kind of fun. It's kind of fun to learn about language. I mean, that's candy to some people. And it's informative, shows you a lot about history, about culture, and it's a great thing. I think it's good for the listeners. I think BarkBox was one thing. Some of you have dogs out there, and if you are a classical guitarist with a dog, you probably are around your dog enough to not have to buy it up. You know, box of candy every month or whatever it was. You know, you get along, you're around, you're there. You know, you're not an absentee father. You're sitting there, you're doing the work, you're practicing, and who's right behind you? Your dog, right? If I lived in a house, if I was part of ownership society, I would have a dog, no doubt about it. That'd be the best thing, just have a dog to pal around with while you're practicing. Sort of keeping you distracted a little bit while you're doing your work. It's great. Sounds like a good thing. But yeah, you're the good dad. That BarkBox stuff is probably for the dog owners that aren't ever there. You know, like the guy who buys flowers for his wife every week because he's out, you know, fiddling around with girls all over the world. You know? So BarkBox is fine. If you want to go to BarkBoxTrial.com/incident. I just feel like Rosetta Stone's a little more in a wheelhouse. Am I right about this? How's everybody doing? Obviously, all the grads are coming out. The kids are about to be out of school, but the college grads were last week, from what I noticed. I saw a lot of people running around in bathrobes with little pink sashes on. The pink sash is what the music majors wore, and every time I saw it, I felt an enormous sense of pride and camaraderie. I mean that. I mean this. This is a very, you know, as I age, I start to realize the gift that we're given with this education of ours. Is it worth the vastness of the entire financial net that we're going to cast? No, it's not. It doesn't do that. It doesn't make money for you. Well, what it does allow you to do, guys, what you have is you have an ability to communicate artistically, to interpret artistically, and to hear things that other people can't hear in music. And it goes far beyond music, the implications of your education. The way that you approach and view art, nature, and the world around you is is superior. I mean, you have this ability to look at things and contrast them, and you have sort of a discourse that you can employ that other people spend the rest of their lives looking for. And they look for it in all sorts of different ways. Some of them destructive, some of them passive. But, you know, whenever you have a guitar student, you know, and it's an adult, they're sitting there looking for something. They need something and they don't have it. And you have it. So it's a grass is always greener situation. Now, you're young and you're just getting out of college and you're surrounded by people who are going to be pretending that they've got it all figured out. But they're just as confused as you are. They're just as lonely. They're just as scared of the future. And take heart in that. Be vulnerable. Let them share and share with them. And at the same time, you're surrounded by artists. And this isn't going to happen again. I don't have any 41-year-old friends that are still artists. And if they are, they've got their art. And they do that, you know, for this many times a day. And they're all locked into their little program. They're not interested in making anything new. And that's something that you can do when you're young. It's something that I still do and I put stock in, but it's not something that any of my friends really do. They want to get paid, and they want to get paid now so that they get home to their children and their families. And that's perfectly understandable and commendable, but it's not artistically sound. And it sort of falls, unfortunately, on you guys out there who don't have these things to come home to really get the job done and to make the compositions. Even if you were, you know, a performance major or whatever, that doesn't matter. You got to make the compositions. Bing Crosby, who I've been listening to religiously for the last 2 weeks, I don't know why. I just get these little musical fetishes. One time it was Gary Wilson, who's a weirdo. Then, Jimmy Duarte. I've just been listening to, you know, radio shows from the 30s. It's just something I do. I just get into these little things, right? So anyway, he said that he would trade all of his fame to write one great song. So maybe you can take this summer, and instead of going out there and blowing your load with the rest of the white kids on a vacation or traveling or whatever, you can actually get something done and contribute to the world in a real way. And, you know, I think that's something that you can do. You can take this summer and get to work, you know, and start realizing what it feels like to be a working artist. Not necessarily a money-making artist, but get something done artistically that takes a lot of time that you've been meaning to do. The world's your oyster in an artistic sense. In a monetary sense, you've signed up for a very dark and frightening existence. But you have this ability. You have this ability to create, and I hope you do. I hope you get out there, and I hope you start creating right away. You will make money as soon as a friend gets you a job. Every job that I've ever gotten has been through a friend. I've never just gone out and done a cold call. And when I do get those jobs, they generally suck. And this goes from guitar to even the bar I work at right now as a, you know, friend. That's just the way it is. You know, unless you go and you want to go into education, you might want to do that. You might want to start working on that certification right away. It's incredibly rewarding to work with kids. There's a lot you can do. But for right now, go out there and do what other people only dream of doing. Do what the rich cats out there only dream of doing. They can't even imagine what it's like to be able to get on a stage and share who you really are. And not only that, just the things you know. Congratulations, graduates. I don't know why I got on that rant, but that was not what I meant to talk about. I was going to talk about how Coffee Meets Bagel thought I was gay for a day, but I guess that's out the window. Anyway, they did. Actually, I signed up for a dating app, which I shouldn't have done because I hate dating, first of all. And that's a second. Well, I don't really hate, you know, it's all right. I don't like dating. I love meeting new people and sitting across the table from someone who's attractive. That's fine. The online dating thing hasn't worked out that way. It's just been a disaster. One of the things was, I guess I'll tell you guys this story and then we'll end it. But the thing is I did Coffee Meets Bagel. You know, I go to bed, I pick out the people I like, you know, then I wake up next morning, and this never happens. If you're a guy And you're not the most gorgeous man on earth, you know, profile wise. You don't just, you know, have a long face or, you know, a tiny little body like people like these days. Or you're not a 41-year-old music teacher. You're not going to attract this many people. So I wake up the next morning and there's like 12 people, because I got an email saying like, you have 12 people that like you, you know, that you matched with or whatever. I said, what the, there's no way. This doesn't happen. It happens to girls all the time. This isn't being sexist. You know, it's true, girls. You know, you guys get on there. I've seen you guys. It's like 1,000 boys. It's just like boom, boom, boom. And so, you know, but this doesn't happen all the time. So I get on there. And it's all guys. So I try to change it. They think I'm gay. That's what happened. I think I'm gay. I try to change it. I change it over. It says no changes. Changes won't be made for 24 to 48 hours. So I'm sitting there going, yeah, well, they all say that. I'll just check in an hour or two. I get a little bit of practice done, look back in. Nope, more boys. More boys are starting to like Big Diaper Brad. I'm very popular on the boys' circuit. The boys love me. The girls don't. And these were top quality guys. I mean, we're talking about, these were like beautiful, successful men. One of the guys worked for the Department of Education, was a high up, a handsome older man. And I couldn't help but think, you know, maybe he could just fast track me through some certification here. So anyway, a whole day passes. Still nothing. I call him the next morning. I'm like, guys, I have no problem with gay stuff at all. I have no problem. I'm not. And this is going to, you know, it's a big city. I have a lot of gay friends. I have friends that I have gay friends. Eventually somebody's going to go, hey, did you know that Brett's gay? Which I wouldn't have the worst thing with. I just think it would have stuck with some people. And some people could have used it as ammunition against my character. I am not gay. But if I was, I would embrace it, you know, 100%. So anyway, the whole thing, finally it switches over. And now I'm back. I'm back. I'm a straight white male again, folks. <laughs> 5'10", 5'11" on a good day. Has a great voice that you can hear on his regular program, Classical Guitar Insider with Brett Williams. But today, let's go to Jose Emilio Gobbo Jr., the jazz extraordinaire, this young man, in this interview I have with him. Take it away, Jose. Jose, instead of Jose. Now, is that...
The name thing. It's an issue. It's an issue.
It is.
Because the way, usually when people ask, what's my name, I say Jose. Why? Because I'm in the United States, and if you see J-O-S-E, what do you say?
You say Jose.
Yes. So just to make it easier. However, some people get like, hey, no, but that's not how you pronounce. So, I mean, it's not a big deal for me.
Yeah, me neither. Because I've been called, I'm Brett.
Okay.
And Brett, for real, straight up. Sure. My girlfriend just laughed because somebody goes, order for bread. And I was like, yeah, that's me.
Okay.
And she like was laughing because she's like, you know. So it's just, I'm not like big on that. But other people are like really sensitive. I have other friends. I have three different Debbies.
Okay.
So I have a Deborah who will only go by Deborah. Okay. A Debbie, sure. And a Deb.
Okay.
And they refuse to be called.
But here.
I don't care.
In Brazil, if your name is Jose.
Yeah.
Nobody calls it Jose. Usually everybody goes for the short of it, which is Zé.
Zé.
Yeah. Or. Oh, okay. I'm a junior as well.
So, sure.
So my parents call me Junior. So
right.
I can't care too much about it because. Hey.
So you have the dad's the exact same. Does your dad play?
Yeah, not professionally.
Yeah.
But it was probably the beginning of me like watching my dad play.
Mm-hmm.
When I was very little, I have like little flashes from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does play well.
What does he play? Does he play more like classical Brazilian or
yes,
or?
Not yeah, but more Brazilian popular music.
Right.
I would call it. Yeah,
right.
So and he studied the conservatory for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he has some training, but he didn't use it as a profession. He worked in a bank for most of his life.
Yeah. Oh, smart guy.
Maybe I don't know. He's definitely a smart guy.
Yeah. He's a smart guy and he plays. Didn't use it as a profession, but I mean, you are a professional guitarist.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as like that Brazilian scene, you know, I keep on getting surprised because I've been, you know, now you can go to Spotify, you can just just bang through music so easily. I can't give you any names.
Okay.
Because I forget them because I'm banging through the music so quickly.
Uh-huh.
But there's so much like 70s rock. For in like 70s,
Brazilian?
Yeah, like a lot. Like it was a big scene.
Sure, probably it's a bigger scene. Kind of
like
80s.
Psychedelic, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Probably more in the 80s and 90s, I would say.
That's what you get. That's where you're starting.
Yeah, in the 70s, of course, there's the Tropicália.
Yeah,
are you familiar with like Caetano Veloso?
Yes,
Gilberto Gil. Yeah,
yeah. Well, that of course, yeah.
Sure, those guys
like,
are
post that I'm talking about, like just guys in the street, like garage bandy.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's more like Lobão.
Yeah.
Those guys, yeah. I mean, that was on the radio when I was growing up.
Yeah.
So I did listen to a lot of that for sure.
There's an album with like a white shoe on it. It's known as the White Shoe album.
Okay.
Do you know about this guy?
Yeah. That's Loborges.
Loborges. Yeah, yeah. Like that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that stuff for the first time in the last like 10 years.
It's beautiful. The thing, I did not grow up with that.
Yeah.
I grew up with more whatever was on the radio at the time, yeah. Which was a lot of American music.
Yeah.
And a lot of Brazilian rock, mostly. Yeah. And but now, I got in touch with those guys, with Loborges, Tony Horta, Flavio Venturini, mm-hmm. all these guys. We call it the Corners Club.
Yeah, it's Tony what?
Tony Horta.
That's who I'm talking about, too, yeah.
Yeah, that's
kind of funny. He's kind of funny. He sounds like he's saying something funny.
Yeah, he usually does.
It's because I don't know what he's
saying. A song called Broken English.
Yeah.
In which he says, I listen to Fred Astaire. And what else he mentions, like? He mentions a bunch of the stuff that he listened to growing up.
Yeah.
And he did not understand the words, but he caught the melodies and he would sing with broken English.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'll always be there, everybody will. That's the day of mine. Just like.
Yeah, that's hilarious because that's exactly what people do with like opera, you know?
Okay,
like good. I do that with Wagner sometimes.
Okay, good.
But as far as that, so yeah, that whole scene, what did you call that scene? The Loborges scene?
Clube da Esquina.
Clube de Esquina.
Da.
Da Esquina.
Yeah.
So that's like, those are words, I think sounds like Club of Esquina.
Yeah.
What is Esquina?
Esquina means corner.
Corner?
Yeah,
corner. Oh, that's because there's a restaurant in New York where I'm from, La Esquina.
All
right. So that means the corner? The corner.
That's where they used to be.
Okay.
There,
I need to speak
what's
Spanish.
The name of the building? There is a building, and Milton Nascimento, that's a big name. Because he's big mm-hmm. on the world music scene.
Mm-hmm.
So, have you heard of?
No,
Milton. Nascimento.
Nascimento, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he recorded with everybody he has an album.
Don't people call him Nascimento? Like sometimes?
No.
That's not the same. That's a different guy.
It could be, but not necessarily. He recorded with Naná Vasconcelos. He did a very famous album with Wayne Shorter. I think it's from 72.
Yeah.
Which is called... I forgot.
Yeah, because now we're getting back into like post Jobim Brazilian jazz.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about that. We're talking about you.
But I mean, Jobim was still alive. No, but I mean, I'm 30 years old.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you're young.
Yeah.
I
mean, compared to
compared to Antonio Carlos Jobim, you're
sure.
a very young man.
Yeah, exactly. I was just born.
Yeah, yeah, you were. So you say I turned 40 this year.
All right.
All right.
Young.
You're 87.
Yeah. There you go.
Good year. Great year.
Yeah. I'm 87. Great. One thing that it's funny about the difference between in the States, people ask, how old are you?
Yeah.
In Brazil, we ask, what's your age?
Yeah.
It's just different. It's just how you put it.
What's your age? Oh, you don't ask. Oh, right. Okay.
You don't ask, like, how old are you?
Oh, yeah. Because old is like almost. Yeah.
It could be. I mean, some people.
Yeah.
Women sometimes get offended if you ask their ages.
I don't. I find a way to figure it out.
All right.
But I don't ever just ask.
No, you shouldn't. Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't. You should. What you should research if you want. If you really, and you really shouldn't be doing that either.
Sure. Yeah. That's
so.
What stalking?
What? that would be stalking.
Exactly.
Now, as far as like what brought you to the United States? Did you study guitar here?
Yeah.
Because you live here. You live in
Illinois.
Urbana,
Champaign.
Champaign. You're like a local
Urbana.
Legend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, uh-huh. What brought me here to the United States, mm-hmm. I went to Iowa City to do my master's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I got my master's there, and then I lived in Brazil for another year.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, since I have an undergrad, since I have a master's degree, why not try to get a doctorate degree? So
right, and that's it. Sorry. Oh, the hand, no, the hands. It what? Picks. It, yeah, pick, yeah, oh, just... it picks up. No, it picks up the hand when it goes to the
here.
Table. This is the best.
All yeah. right. Yeah.
Okay. No, I didn't even because I was supposed to tell you that. I'll edit that
sorry.
Stuff.
Okay.
Cool. Don't be sorry. So go ahead again. You were you continue.
The reason, yeah. I mean, I wanted to be. I mean, since I was probably 16 or 17, I started moving more towards jazz, mm-hmm. and actually, of course, fusion first, because I grew up listening to rock and roll. The first song that I played on the guitar was "Fear of the Dark," Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
So
you started out with rock and roll.
Metallica, Iron Maiden, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, mm-hmm. etc. Yeah. So, and then when I was probably 16 or 17, I started listening to jazz music.
Yeah.
So fusion first, and then jazz. So I was getting more serious about it. So as I was getting more serious about it, I was like, okay, just trying to get to a scene to get closer to the source, let's say.
Right. So, and then, well, that I would imagine that would draw you to some things, but why the Midwest?
Oh, because
that's the festival, and what we're doing right now is we're really, it seems like what they are doing is a lot similar to what I'm trying to do, which is to bring everybody together
sure.
into this. And one of the ways that we do that is by bringing that stuff to places where it might not necessarily always happen.
Okay, yeah. Know? I mean, that's for sure. Yeah. What brought, why you ask, why the Midwest?
Yeah.
Because a really good friend of mine, Marcel, piano player, he went to do his master's at the University of Iowa, and he kept telling me, hey, I think you're really going to like here. Mm-hmm. I remember I was saying, like, man, I can't play jazz, you know, what am I going to do there? And he said, no, with what you play, you're completely fine. I think. And then I applied for it. I met the director there, which is John Rapson, mm-hmm. really great yeah. guy. And yeah, and then I applied for it, and they accepted me, so I went.
And then you went. And you went here?
To the University of Iowa first to get my master's.
Iowa. Yeah. Okay, so I'm getting them mixed up because we're not in Iowa.
I know.
We are in Illinois.
Yeah.
So Iowa is where you went. You went to the University of Iowa.
I went for my master's at the University of Iowa, and I'm working on my doctorate here at the University of Illinois.
And are you going to study with, who are you going to study with here? Classical or jazz?
I've been here. That's my fourth year here. So I've been studying with jazz.
Yeah.
Jazz performance.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as like the jazz scene here,
it's beautiful.
I mean, it really seems like a cool town. All college towns are great,
yeah.
you know.
I only know two, but
yeah,
it seems to be the case.
Exactly. So you really haven't been out that much as far as like out into the United States?
I travel.
I mean, you're busy. You've been studying the whole time you've been here.
Studying and playing.
When
and
you're studying,
teaching.
You're broke and you have stuff to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
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 I did travel a little bit when I was about to finish my undergrad degree in Brazil. I did play in a cruise ship for 5 months, so that was a lot of traveling.
You know, I've never talked about cruise ships with people, but that is an experience that a lot of people have. I mean,
it's been a while, but yeah.
What was that like? How long?
It was fantastic and horrible at the same time.
How was it? Let's start with why it was horrible. The part I like to.
There you go. It was horrible because can you imagine 5 months living in a closed environment?
No.
And seeing the same people all the time.
No, it sounds awful.
It could be. Some people may love it.
If you like the people, did you have? Are you married?
I am married now.
Were you married then?
Nope.
Were you in a relationship then?
I was not.
Okay, so that to me sounds kind of fun then, if you have a crush on somebody that's in
the boat. Many people had crushes in many people. It was like...
Yeah. No, there's a show called... what's it called? Below Deck.
Uh-huh. I've never seen, but I believe you.
You believe me? It's a show. It's about these like people that go on cruise. They just... It's everybody... If you're stuck on a boat with people, they start to... Everybody starts
what
to look good
do?
After a while.
Oh,
you
yeah.
have to... You have to... You need love. Humans need love.
All you need.
Love is all you need, and you need it all the time. So the thing is you were on this boat. It sounds like some parts of it were great. And what were the great parts?
Oh, seeing places. Just like I went to Egypt. I went to Greece. I went to a bunch of crazy places that I'm sure it would take me a while to save money to go. So it was great.
Oh, man, that's really cool. What was Egypt like?
Beautiful. However, I remember I went to the pyramids, and I was, like, afraid to
just... To go to the top?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems, so it's because it's really like a mountain.
It's definitely, it's, how do you call it, like, inspiring and threatening at the same time. I mean,
yeah.
It's the pyramids. Have you been there?
Yeah, no, I would love to go.
Okay.
But I don't, I can totally see how being on a pyramid would be frightening, because if you're in the mountains, there's only a couple of places where you look down and it seems like it's far, but in the pyramid, every time you look down, it seems like it's... All you have to do, and it's relatively steep, right?
Steep, I don't know what steep is.
Steep means this is steep, this is not steep.
Okay, sure.
So steep, it's steep. It's steep enough to scare you.
But I mean, not looking from outside is easy, but it's just to like go inside and see whatever it's in there.
Yeah.
I mean.
What do you think about, you know, so then you hop back on the boat, you come back. From the cruise ship.
Yeah.
You took a break, I'm assuming. Was this a break between master's and doctorate?
No. I was supposed to graduate. I was about to graduate. Mm-hmm. And then I took a little break from school to go to this cruise ship. And then I went back and finished the undergrad degree.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. In Brazil.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And as far as studying music, when you were doing the undergrad, were you doing jazz or were you doing pop music or were you doing classical?
Popular. We call it popular music. It's probably more... It's similar to what we call jazz performance here.
Yes.
So they call it like they divide it in between popular music and classical music. Here it's jazz and
classical. You study jazz and classical.
Yeah.
Whereas you would there probably would have been more of a jazz program than like a Berklee program or something.
Yeah. I would say so.
Well, so you're pretty far along in your education. I mean, you're getting through there. And as far as sort of the approaches that you put, I saw you play last night.
Mm-hmm.
You sing while you play a little bit, or you sing along with you do the, what do you call that when you scat with when you're playing?
No, it's not scat. It's humming.
Humming.
I would say. Or is that something?
I see that a lot with jazz, jazz guitarists. Where does that come from? Do you know where that comes from? What the function
not
of humming along with melody is?
I know for me.
Okay.
It's just if I'm singing or it just makes it's easier to make the connection with what I'm hearing in my head.
Yeah.
And with what I'm trying to play on the guitar. So I just realize if I record myself that when I'm only let's say especially if I'm looking at the fretboard and not singing, usually it's can call it stiff, maybe.
Yeah, right.
It's not really what I really want to play.
Right.
So if I'm singing, and usually the best that I'm playing when I'm really forget about the whole planet is if I close my eyes and I'm humming what I'm playing, I notice that's usually what I really like to play.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as like theoretically what's happening there, I mean...
Oh, I have no idea.
Because it seems, I mean, part of me was watching it, and I was just, you know, I've been watching a lot of stuff this weekend. And I was watching it, and I haven't really thought much about that before, but you aren't mumbling like a Glenn Gould does or anything. You're not doing that. You're actually, you're singing.
That's good, then.
Probably. It's good. It means you're matching the pitch that you're playing. And also, well, you're playing the pitch that you're singing. So in that case, when you're doing that, it seems challenging. It seems like you would actually really have to know what you're doing half-step and whole-step-wise.
It could be, yeah. Right. I mean, especially...
Because there's a split second after you sing it where you play it, right?
Or almost at the same time,
At the same time. That's. I mean, it seems challenging.
Yeah, but it's not something that I'm trying to do, like... Or I don't know if George Benson, he seems to do it on purpose.
Yeah, right.
It's just something extra. Just like, hey, I'm doing this and that.
And then if things get a little too fast with the fingers, you can't sing anymore.
But he can't.
He can.
Oh, yeah. He can't.
Right. So George Benson, is he your man? Is he, you like him?
One of, for sure.
Yeah. You definitely have, your vibe up there is definitely sort of 70s fusion in a way. It is.
Could be.
You're doing standards probably because that's what you're working on. You're a working musician. You're also a student. You're still figuring, you know, even though you're 30, you know, so you know what's going on. You know what's up. But you're still... You got to have a mixed bag. Being a student at 30 is you know, that's an interesting place to be in.
For sure.
How does it feel to be an older student at 30? I know a lot of our listeners are doctoral students that are at least 28, 29. I got the master's and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as studying jazz in particular, that's such like the form is about freedom, creativity, not necessarily interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as like studying and having, I mean, do you ever feel stifled, stale by, you know? Like,
not necessarily so, because always when I started the first degree that I tried to get,
right,
undergrad,
mm-hmm,
I was always playing, or at least trying to be involved in the local scene as much as possible.
Right.
So, and I'm trying to do this here. Maybe I did a little bit too much. Maybe I forgot about school a little bit too much.
Right.
So, and I was just trying to play all the time. Mm-hmm. So you ask, how does it feel? It doesn't feel stale to me, at least.
Right.
At the moment, at least.
No, and it didn't sound stale.
To me, it was. I was nervous, yeah.
You were nervous. I get so nervous if I haven't played in a while. And when you're a student, you don't play every night. So were you nervous?
I was, but mostly the solo guitar thing, that's not something that I worked on a whole lot.
Right.
So it's challenging.
So were there moments when you just started kind of soloing?
Yeah, the problem is I don't think you can play. Yeah. I don't think you can improvise and analyze.
And this is incredibly important for people to hear, that you got nervous, because a lot of people come on, they're very uncomfortable talking about getting nervous. I always make sure that people know that we get very nervous in the wrong situations.
People even pass out.
Yeah. Like, I've had out-of-body experiences. I mean, the worst day, one of the worst days of my life was my junior recital. It's just, I was like, I can't do this forever. But as far as getting up there, and you're talking about last night, what do you think it was that triggered the nerves?
Maybe.
You didn't look nervous, okay. I should say.
Good, thank you.
You held it together.
Uh-huh. I was going to say that I don't think you can improvise and analyze what you're doing at the same time.
Yeah.
It's if you're like thinking, oh, now I'm going to play the sharp 11 off the B flat, you know, you lost the moment,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And I've heard people talking about it and people talking against it. But
right.
I do believe in that. That yeah. If you're thinking too much about what you're doing, it's not going to be as spontaneous as you probably want.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so in that case, you were probably going through something where you were thinking... and you were like, I can't think, I'm not supposed to be thinking. And then that starts to get in your head. And you're like, just don't think.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think I do.
Because I've never improvised in front of a large audience in a concert that is about...
Yeah,
I've never had that experience. And it seems... At first, it seems kind of cool because you can just have fun up there, but you really do have to be free.
Yeah, it's challenging.
How do you... cultivate, like going into the future and going into, you know, your past experiences, how do you cultivate a situation like that where you are nervous and then you want to move forward? What do you just cultivate more performances?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think you just try to play more in front of people, you know, or show a friend what are you doing, like, hey, I'm working on this. I had a list of a little how do you call it, a sketch of a set list.
Mm-hmm.
And I had songs, my original compositions or arrangements that I had for songs. But I just, when I got there, I just didn't feel as confident to play that. And sometimes I do feel.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm much more used to playing at bars and clubs than to playing in front of that type of audience with all nice stage and beautiful lights and everything.
Yeah. So. Oh, it's so fun. I have my bassist for my group. I have a classical quartet.
Uh-huh.
And my bassist plays jazz a lot. All bassists, whether they're classical or not, that's the way that they make some side money, or at least. And he's a very passionate. You know Gene Bertaccini. He's a
he writes books as well, don't he?
I don't know if he does, but he was the late night show guitarist Johnny Carson.
Okay,
so I know Gene. I went to go see Gene. That's how I met Josh.
I saw Jim Hall. I think auditioning for that. I don't know if
Jim Hall.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the same show, but there's a YouTube thing of Jim Hall auditioning, which is fun. It's funny.
It is?
Yep.
And it's like black and white or whatever?
Yep.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Uh-huh. And I'll definitely look that up. That sounds awesome.
Bertaccini?
No. But Josh plays jazz every Thursday in front of a, I would say, a sizable audience at a place called, just, you know, throwing a bone, Ryan's Daughter on the Upper East Side in New York. And but when he does a show with us, he's so nervous. Like, he's just sweating, and because it's so quiet.
All right.
And they're all paying attention to you, like, so hard. And
expecting you to fuck up.
Yeah. And well, just watching the different kinds of guitars and the different reactions that everybody had. My feeling was that everybody last night was a little nervous. I didn't see anybody who was just...
I watched...
It was a nervous situation. I think three or four... It was a lot of people in a small room.
Uh-huh. But the guys before me, I think they sounded great.
Oh, they did, yeah. You sounded great, too.
Thank you.
You did, dude.
And everybody seemed calm to me, at least.
Well, everybody seemed calm.
Okay.
But it seemed like there was... I think when you have those small sets, it's hard to let loose. You don't have time to let loose. You have 10 minutes. It takes me 10 minutes to stop freaking out.
Sure. Well, yeah.
You know, when I play a solo concert or anything like that.
Yeah, uh-huh. Right? For sure, yeah.
So as far as that's concerned, I think you did a real bang-up job. And let's talk about the other kind of guitars. Do you play? You seem to have when you did play solo guitar. What's your approach to playing solo jazz guitar for our listeners? That, you know, we haven't had too many of those guys on.
Sure, but. I mean, listen to what history, I would say.
Right.
Like, probably the first name that, at least to my mind, that I can think of is Joe Pass.
Joe Pass.
So, I mean. It's so, something that I don't even try to do to sound like that.
Running bass lines. With,
yeah.
Right.
And I mean, he does it so fluidly and he swings so much. Yeah. It's he is definitely a in control of that approach.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, not only him, like Peter Bernstein has been doing lots of solo sets and sounds incredible. Yeah, I think just references. I'm not trying to do it all myself. Like, oh, this is new. I invented it. That's not. What I'm
no, you're a straight. I mean, right now you're a straight ahead jazz guy. With, and I'm that the caveat being, no, there is definitely the Brazilian element is constantly there.
Yep.
And there's a fusion element as well.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It's a pretty cool mix.
Thank you.
And do you feel like you've completely figured out exactly what that's going to be, or do you? Is this a work in progress to an extent?
I think so.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, cool. If you want to play jazz music, that's maybe a cliche, but you have to enjoy the process.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. If you're trying to, like, oh, finally, now I know what it is. Of course, I'm trying to get closer to something that I really love playing all the time.
Right.
Which sometimes happens, sometimes it don't. Sometimes I hate what I play. Sometimes I love. But I mean, I can feel that I'm definitely getting closer to liking what I'm doing more and more.
Well, that's great. And it is an interesting world that we live in musically now, where we are the beneficiaries of so many genres coming together.
Yeah.
The side effect is that I think it's it takes us a little bit longer to figure out what we're doing.
It could be for sure.
It takes us longer to find our voice because a lot of things have been done. We're now listening to music from everywhere.
Yep.
You and I, an American from California, and you are having, I'm aware of this rock music from Brazil. You live in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
We're so cosmopolitan that it's just a lot to work through before you go. I can't imagine, like you're saying, I can't really imagine stopping and saying, well, that's what I do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to keep changing, right?
And like you did a solo concert last night and you have a trio, I think, right? Is that right? Or is it?
No, I mean.
You have a couple of groups.
Yeah. Like tonight, for example.
Yeah.
I'm playing trio.
Yeah.
Just guitar, bass, and drums.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I used to, I may continue doing that. I don't know how it's going to be my schedule. But I was running the jam session here every Wednesday.
At
this place, the Iron Post. I don't know if. It's the local jazz club.
Where is that located? This is Oregon.
That's in
over
Race.
Here.
Race.
It's close? It's close to here? Race?
Yeah. Like walking must be like 15 minutes walk.
Oh man, I would love to go there. Unfortunately, I'm like not unfortunately, but I'm
here. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, it's good though, day. Right?
There's oh, lots of, this is the best. This is so much fun.
For
this
sure.
Is so cool. And you're going to school here and you said you're starting your fourth year, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's great. One thing that it's really inspiring here, though, that I should mention,
right,
that the you asked me if I feel stiff, like as a 30-year-old guy still in school.
Yeah.
One thing that helps the process, that makes me feel good about it,
yeah,
is that...
And you should feel good. Oh, I don't mean to make you feel bad in any way.
For sure.
Like, that's not... Yeah. Studying is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the members of the faculty here, mm-hmm, they're all amazing teachers and players at the same time.
Right.
There's nobody that just, like, do research, or which is good as well. Like, if you do musicology, it's great as well. It's just different.
Right.
But the faculty here, everybody that I studied with, they are amazing players that I want to be influenced by.
Right.
So... that helps.
Do you ever go study at the classical guy with... I mean, this is his first year, I think.
Guido?
Yeah, Guido.
I should, because I've been just grabbing... I have a bunch of books from the library here, mm-hmm, that I'm just trying by myself, but that would be a good idea.
Yeah, get some right-hand finger picking in and stuff like that, too, because that would be fun.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And he's really good. Did you see him last
Yeah,
night?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he was like, he wrote his own stuff. He's coming in next. He's coming in at 12.
I didn't know. Was it his... compositions?
I asked him and he said it was.
It was beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was really complicated. Like, yep. I was like, this is really serious, especially that last movement. It was a 3-movement piece. Uh-huh. I can't wait to talk to him about that. But
it reminded a little bit of a Brazilian composer that I really love called Ginga.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was very Brazilian. Is he Brazilian?
I don't know. He has Portuguese in his name, but I don't know. Guido Portuguese? Portuguese? I don't know.
Anyway, so, you know, I'm going to let you go, but is there anything else that you want to talk about before, you know, you go? You've got as much time or as little as you
need. Yeah, I got 5 minutes, probably. but
as far as, like, what you have...
I should say thank you for inviting for the interview.
What are you talking about? Forget about it. It's no big deal.
Forgot
it. Have you ever go to New York?
I've been there once for a few days, and it was ridiculous.
A party.
You
saw a lot of music?
Yeah, I mean, every day you would go it was good for my friend's family were sponsoring it, so we could go to 2 or 3 shows a night. And I went
they were sponsoring like a trip?
They were just like paying for, you want to go to this show? Go.
Go. Here's the credit card. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, well, that's such an important, you know, we really should rely on patrons more.
For sure.
The sponsorship.
Yeah, it would be great. I remember I went to see, like, Kurt Rosenwinkel, went to see Peter Bernstein. And every night I went to the Fat Cat after.
Yeah,
and I went to every jam session and played, like, probably sounded horrible in every jam session.
No.
It was fun. It was definitely fun.
You did not. Did you go to Smalls and do that jam session?
I did go to Smalls, yeah.
That has to be.
I think Sacha Perry hosted.
Uh-huh.
I remember the night that I went to see Kurt Rosenwinkel, his drummer, Justin Faulkner,
mm-hmm,
I played a tune with him at the Fat Cat. So it was just like, it was overwhelming for sure, amazing at the same time.
Oh, that's so beautiful. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of that happens in Chicago as well. I don't know if you know the scene there.
Chicago is huge. I mean, Chicago, like I say, like, what draws people to the Midwest? Like, there is this city called Chicago we may have heard of.
If you just think of guitar players there.
Which is where, you know, half of it all came from.
All right, yeah.
If you think about the guitarists from there.
There's so many.
Is Wes Montgomery from there? Is he?
No, he's from Indianapolis. Or close to Indianapolis.
Right, yeah. Indianapolis, which is not Chicago.
I don't know much about it, so
it's pretty cool.
I know that.
I don't know. I don't know either. I'm from California. I live in New York.
I went to
Texas for college,
okay,
so that was my middle experience.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was great talking to you, and more importantly, you know, the fun thing about traveling out here is I get to meet people out here that are, you know, just getting it done out here. You think you're going to stay here after you graduate?
I have no idea.
What does your wife do?
She's just accompanying me here. She's a psychologist.
Oh, we need those as guitarists.
Great, but first, I mean, she can't be working here as a psychologist.
Yeah.
So she's just accompanying me for the moment. But maybe eventually, who knows, maybe I get a citizenship and I can stay and maybe she can work as a psychologist here.
I feel like she could start her own practice. Who doesn't want to talk to a Brazilian psychologist?
Sure, but it's not legal. So you can't do it.
Never is. Listen, so it was great to talk to you and a good to meet a new friend.
Okay, great.
All right, thanks so much, man.
Right on.
All right, guys, that does it for my time with Jose. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you guys next time. And remember to donate to the show and to go to brettwilliamsmusic.com to become a member of for $5 a month. Thanks a lot, and I'll see you guys next time. Bye.